produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular audio podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, normalaudiostash.com. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. Welcome back to the Audio Stash. Today it is Friday, August 10th. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us at Normal to help end senseless marijuana prohibition in America. Join us today at norml.org. Many of the nation's top activists and reformers are in Austin, Texas here today for the Austin Freedom Fest with Willie Nelson, Carolyn Wonderland, Asleep at the Wheel, and others. More information about the show at austinfreedomfest.com. We're going to have some great audio from this event for you on the Audio Stash next week. And here on the program today, we've got Steve Bloom with the CelebStoner.com update. Steve's also going to talk about the softball leagues, which are making quite an impact in Washington, D.C. and New York City. Also in the show today, some more great music, great Texas-themed music for the Austin Freedom Fest today. First today from Washington, D.C., latest pot smoking warnings call for education, not prohibition, Normal says. Respiratory risks may be mitigated by vaporization and regulation. Recent media reports alleging that the daily use of cannabis may impede certain lung functions should be seen as an opportunity to better educate marijuana consumers about ways to mitigate the health risks associated with smoking. Normal senior policy analyst Paul Armentano said today. The widely reported study published online in the journal Thorax found that the daily long-term smoking of cannabis cigarettes obstructed airflow to the lungs in a manner equivalent to smoking 2.5 to 5 tobacco cigarettes in succession. Investigators hypothesized that this result was because some marijuana smokers may consume greater quantities of both tar and carcinogenic hydrocarbons than do those who inhale filtered tobacco cigarettes. Heavy use of cannabis was also associated with wheezing, cough, and chest tightness, researchers found. However, investigators did not find a positive association between smoking cannabis and the development of emphysema, which is an overinflation of the air sacs in the lungs. Emphysema is the most common cause of death from respiratory disease in the United States. Armentano said that cannabis consumers have long been aware that smoking marijuana cigarettes can irritate the lungs, but added that most of pot's potential health risks to the respiratory system may be eliminated by vaporization.
By heating marijuana to a temperature where active cannabis vapors form below the point of combustion, consumers significantly reduce their intake of gaseous combustion toxins, including carbon monoxide.
That was Normal senior policy analyst Paul Armentano. Most recently, investigators at San Francisco General Hospital reported in the journal Clinical Pharmacology and Therapeutics that the, quote, vaporization of marijuana does not result in exposure to combustion gases and is preferred by most subjects compared to marijuana cigarettes, close quote. A previous clinical trial published in 2006 in the Journal of Pharmaceutical Sciences reported that, quote, vaporization is a safe and effective, close quote, cannabinoid delivery system that, quote, avoids the respiratory disadvantages of smoking, close quote. Armentano also affirmed that cannabis smoking is not positively associated with cancers of the lung, mouth, or upper era digestive tract, e.g. the pharynx, larynx, or esophagus. In 2006, the results of the largest case-controlled study ever to investigate the respiratory effects of marijuana smoking, reported that pot use was not associated with cancer, even among subjects who reported smoking more than 22,000 joints over their lifetime.
While smoking cannabis may pose a minor respiratory risk to the user, these health risks are far less than those posed by tobacco smoking and may be significantly mitigated by engaging in vaporization as an alternative to smoking. Unfortunately, cannabis prohibition greatly limits consumers' access to such devices and impedes technological advancements in this area, subjecting users to respiratory risks that they otherwise would avoid.
That was Normal Senior Policy Analyst Paul Armentano. For more information, please contact Paul directly at paul@normal.org. Additional information is available in Normal's white paper, Cannabis Smoke and Cancer, Assessing the Risk, available online at norml.org. Paul, vaporization is something we've covered extensively here on the Audio Stash. You know, why do you think it hasn't caught on more here in the United States as a common consumption technique?
There's a couple factors. Certainly the cost of a good vaporizer is one of the reasons I think many people avoid purchasing one. And I think clearly prohibition plays a large part in why vaporization is not very common in the United States. Clearly, vaporizers are not nearly as available as most smoking devices. That's an outgrowth of prohibition. Their high cost is no doubt an outgrowth of prohibition. Vaporizers are considered paraphernalia, and thus their possession in many instances could be deemed illegal under state and or federal law. So for those reasons, people that would otherwise most likely choose the safer alternative of cannabis inhalation simply do not.
So, Paul, if consumers vaporize every day, they will simply never come into contact with any of that bad stuff associated with smoking.
Clearly, their intake of certain carcinogens that we know are available in marijuana smoke are reduced dramatically when vaporization is used. There are now 2 clinical trials and at least 1 study of survey data that have been published that confirm those findings.
But even if cannabis consumers don't have a vaporizer, having coughing or wheezing or phlegm is certainly not a disease like tobacco-caused emphysema.
Sure. I think one of the most important things that can be discussed, particularly in light of the recent study that was published and made, you know, headlines across the country, was that the 2 fatal illnesses most associated with tobacco, lung cancer and emphysema, there has not been proven to be a causal connection between marijuana smoking and the development of those 2 diseases, whereas there has been a significant association and a causal one between tobacco smoking and those 2 illnesses.
And Paul, when it comes to this specific study in the journal Thorax Online, although media reported some test results, it was only 1 out of many that cannabis showed any result that could be considered in any way negative.
That's true. They looked at a battery of 6 or 7 different measurements of smoking and its impact on the lungs, and they only in 1 of the measurements they looked at found that marijuana caused an adverse reaction that was worse than tobacco. In most of the other measurements, they found that marijuana smoking had an insignificant or very minor effect on the lung.
That was Paul Armentano, Normal Senior Policy Analyst. You can contact him directly at paul@normal.org. You know, let's start our day off, since Willie Nelson will be on stage in just a few hours under the big sky at the Backyard Venue here in Austin, Texas. Let's get things started with this one from Willie Nelson. This is off the Hempilation 2 album, a High Times production to benefit Normal. Here's Willie with me and Paul.
Well, it's been rough and rocky traveling, but I'm finally standing upright on the ground. And after taking several readings, I'm surprised to find my mind still fairly sound. I thought Nashville was the roughest, but I know I've said the same about them all. received our education in the cities of the nation, me and Paul. Almost busted in Laredo, but for reasons that I'd rather not disclose. But if you're staying in a motel there and leave, just don't leave nothing in your clothes. And at the airport in Milwaukee, they refused to let us board the plane at all. They said we looked suspicious, but I believe they like to pick on me and Paul. Show in Buffalo with us, Kitty Wells and Charlie Pride. The show was long and we were just sitting there, and we'd come to play and not just for the ride. And we drank a lot of whiskey, so I don't know if we went on that night at all. But I don't think they even missed us. I guess Buffalo ain't geared for me at all. Been rough and rocky travel, but I'm finally standing upright on the ground. And after taking several readings, I'm surprised to find my mind still fairly sound. I thought Branson was the roughest, but I know I've said the same about them all. We received our education in the cities of the nation, me and Paul.
Willie Nelson with me and Paul here on the Audio Stash today from the Hempelation 2 album, a High Times production as a benefit to Normal. And what's happening tonight? Well, let's find out from Ray Benson from Asleep at the Wheel.
Howdy, folks. I'm Ray Benson of Asleep at the Wheel, and I'll be on stage this Friday with my good friend Willie Nelson, Carolyn Wonderland, Megan Tubb, and many, many others at the Backyard in Austin, Texas, this Friday, August 10th at 7 o'clock p.m. for a special benefit concert. More information available at austinfreedomfest.org.
You're listening to Normal's Daily Audio Stash.
It's Friday here on the Audio Stash, and that means we check in with Steve Bloom at CelebStoner.com.
I want to be famous. I want to wear minks and satins and pearls.
Steve Bloom has his finger on the pulse of celebrity stoners on the planet, and marijuana news, you can read about it all at CelebStoner.com. Steve, welcome back to the show today.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
Doing very well this week, man. Looking forward to being at this Willie Nelson show tonight. Steve, I want to start today by discussing something that has become an interesting part of the organization seeking reform, and something you've been involved with, and that is softball. Out there on the diamond in the summer, the cut grass, the smack of the bat, and the game that is softball. Softball has become this interesting subculture inside the subculture of media out there and politics. Students for Sensible Drug Policy, SSDP, and High Times Magazine both have very good softball teams. Tell us a bit about all of this. I know SSDP, they're getting some broader media play about their on-field prowess there.
Yeah, well, that's Chris Crane's team. You know, he's been on on your show quite a few times. You know, Chris runs the Students for Sensible Drug Policy. Chris and I are both big softball and baseball mavens, and over the years, Chris has been coaching the one-hitters, and I coach the bong-hitters, and we've always wanted to play each other. Numerous times Chris and I have talked about road trips that would either take one team to Washington or the other team to New York. But as it turns out, this year the one-hitters are probably even outpacing the bong-hitters because they're leading the Congressional League, which is a big league. I mean, there's over 70 teams. And meanwhile, the bong-hitters are in third place in the New York Media Softball League. I'm no longer coaching the bong-hitters. I'm now running the league, as we call the NYMSL. I'm the commissioner. Excited about that. It's something new, and we started this year. So as far as Chris's thing, I'm very proud of him and congratulations, but I really can't speak too much about it because I, you know, don't know the teams too well. But as far as what's going on here in New York, what we decided to do after many years of playing unofficially against teams, other media teams, when I was coaching the High Times softball team, we would just play games and we'd keep our own records, and, you know, and there would be sort of basically bragging right matches and who's better. And finally, I and other, you know, coaches decided that we would start a league. And so over the last winter, we organized the league, which is a 6-team league, and it includes Business Week, Wall Street Journal, High Times, DC Comics, WNYC radio station, and Trader Monthly magazine. So it's a small 6-team league, and we're probably going to expand it next year to maybe an 8 or 10 team. And, you know, the problem is for teams to get to join the league, you need to have permits from the New York City Parks Department permits, and they're a little hard to come by. And since the High Times team has been playing for so many years, going back to the mid-90s, they were able to acquire permits and each year get more permits, and same thing with all the other teams. So the requirement is that you have to have permits. And so there's a lot of good teams out there who play in other leagues that might be corporate leagues, and they acquire the permits. That's not how we do it. You have to go and get your own permits, and if you have permits, then you qualify to be in the league. So all the teams that we have in the league all have are permitted teams. And so we've instituted some rules that didn't exist before we had an official league. And the reason why we started the league was primarily for the competition reason, where, you know, we'd know each other's records, we'd set up a standings, and it would be obviously official compared to what we've been doing in the past, and also to set up some guidelines so that each team has to play by the same rules. And what had happened in the past is, you know, the home team was, you know, decide whether they wanted it to be an umpired game, whether they wanted it to be a co-ed game. You know, they'd set up their own rules. And so we've now set up rules that are very clear-cut. All games are umpired. As it turns out, down in D.C. in Chris's league, they don't have umpires. We have a co-ed rule, which is not a strict rule yet in terms of, you know, people listening and know about softball would know that co-ed is usually at least 3 or 4 women. Right now, our league is 2 women, so you have to have 2 out of the 10 players on the field and in the lineup have to be women. We're working towards a goal of increasing that. In the past, we've had problems with teams not even coming with women despite it being a co-ed game. So we set up some rules, and we're following that. And each team plays each other twice, a home game on each field. It's a 10-game schedule. We're coming down to the end of the schedule. The season began in May, and right now Business Week is leading the league. They're 8-0. They're pretty much better than every team this year. Nobody's beat them. And with 2 games to go, there's a chance that they might lose a game finally, and then we'll go into the playoffs and see if anybody can knock them off. Second place right now is Wall Street Journal. They're 5-3. Third place is High Times. They're 6-4. Fourth place is DC Comics, 4-4. Fifth place, WNYC, 2-8. And last place is Trader Monthly, 1-7. So the top 4 teams will play in a round-robin playoff. The first team versus the fourth team, the second team versus the third, and right now that's been decided already. The top 4 teams are, it's clear cut who is in the playoffs, but it's not clear who's going to play each other as the last games get played and the standings finalized. So we're working towards that, working towards a playoff schedule, and everything we're sort of doing a little bit on the fly because it's the first year. We're still looking for permits to play our playoff games and trying to figure it into the schedule as we head towards the end of August and the beginning of September and wrapping up the league. But it's been a lot of fun. It turns out Business Week has been the best team this year. What makes them so good, they have a good pitcher. They have some left-handed hitters. Matter of fact, they're so good that they've won their last 31 games in a row. So it's pretty much an outstanding record that they have. They haven't lost a game since losing to High Times at the beginning of last season, and they've reeled off 16 wins last year and 15 wins this year. So, you know, they've eclipsed the High Times record, unofficial record in the league of 29 games in a row undefeated, with their 31 victories in a row now. So they're the team to beat by far. And it's been a lot of fun. You know, you look at the type of teams in the league and you think, well, High Times and Wall Street Journal, you know, what do they have in common? But, you know, everybody's in media. And as it turns out, when the teams started playing each other, they weren't quite as friendly as they are now. Now I think there's a lot of respect amongst all the teams. They can go to Pleb Stoner and go to the MYMSL link and see what the standings are, the schedules, read the game reports, read the media coverage that the league has gotten in the last month or so, and keep up with, you know, what's going on in the league. In the past, nobody really knew whose record, who had what record, who was playing who. Now we all know. Now it's all official. So it's a lot of fun, and we're winding down. We're looking forward to the playoffs, and we're going to continue next year and looking to add some teams.
Well, from the athleticism of softball to the slide-outs of celebrities, you're tracking an interesting story out there, Steve. I want to get to this one. What's happening with Amy Winehouse?
Well, yesterday morning, early in the morning at 1 a.m., Amy Winehouse was taken to a hospital in England and in London. It's been reported that she had a drugs collapse or a drug overdose, and it's a little unclear whether that's true or not, but she came to a hospital with her husband and a friend, and she apparently collapsed as she got into the reception area, very weak, and she's been suffering from exhaustion. She's been missing a lot of shows. You know, people don't know who Amy Winehouse is. She's the singer of the song Rehab, and it's obviously ironic that the singer of Rehab, who would sing No, 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 I'm Not Going to Rehab, is most likely Yes, 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 going to end up in rehab. And this is most likely due to drinking and maybe some drug taking. She claims that she just dabbles. The rumors are that she likes cocaine, and she claims otherwise. The fellow that she married, Blake Fielder Civil, 2 months ago, in Miami, is being, you know, it's believed that, you know, he's contributed to her condition. Although she is claiming that she has weight issues, she says somewhere between bulimia and anorexia, that she has weight problems. She's become very rail thin, and so it's really right now unclear what her problem is, because, you know, the UK papers tend to blow things a little bit out of proportion, although, of course, they know quite a bit better than what we know right now, because they're there and we're not. I'm not really sure whether it's true, because the article didn't really refer to any drugs or any statements from the hospital whatsoever. She apparently had her stomach pumped, but she also was discharged from the hospital shortly thereafter. If she had an overdose, you'd think she'd be staying in the hospital longer than, you know, a couple of hours. So I'm not so sure really what the status of this is. It could be a little bit exaggerated. It might not be a drug overdose, but either way, you know, she's burning the candle, so to speak, and pushing it a bit. And she has a show on Monday where she's opening for the Rolling Stones in Germany, and, you know, she better get it back together, because she just got nominated for MTV Awards, and, you know, she's riding a wave of success and popularity, but at the same time, she's undercutting it with this erratic behavior, and she's quite a good singer, and she's an exciting, you know, new talent on the music scene, and, you know, it's a little bit of a shame if she can't, you know, just stabilize her life a little bit and just concentrate on her music.
I guess being a touring musician, you know, it's really a tough job, especially if it's kind of a new gig.
Well, you know, I'm not going to feel too bad for musicians who have to go out there and work and tour. And, you know, it seems like, you know, somebody, you know, it's a dream job for most people, that, you know, you're not going to an office, you're going to a stadium or an arena or a club, and this is your, you know, your job. But the problem is, if you have a drug problem or an alcohol problem, it's very hard to get away from it when you're on tour, because, you know, you're playing venues where people are drinking, you're backstage. I mean, there are some, you know, musicians, you know, who, you know, have had problems, and they go sober, and they, you know, ban all kinds of alcohol and anything else backstage, so they don't have to be around it. You know, anybody knows that pretty much it's common sense that if somebody's battling an addiction problem, you don't want to put it in their face and say, you know, and challenge them to not use it. So, you know, I mean, it goes with the territory. Obviously, you know, drinking and partying and drug use, you know, kind of comes with the territory of music and rock and roll. So you have to be very careful not to fall into the pitfalls, and apparently she has, you know, and so that's the concern, you know, and she has stepped away from marijuana, as she's sort of reported, and if she is doing cocaine, you know, of course, all of us, you know, who favor marijuana would wish that she would maybe abide by some medical marijuana at this point, and, you know, get away from the hard drugs and the alcohol.
Also, Steve, up at CelebStoner.com, I know you're a dedicated follower of baseball, and you have kind of a rant going on They're about Barry Bonds, not really about Mr. Bonds himself, but about the public's reaction to him.
Yeah, I do. I wrote an editorial, like I said, we call bullshit on the Barry Bonds backlash. And, you know, I tend to take the side of the celebrities on Celeb Stoner. Instead of going after them, I kind of defend them, as I did with Paris Hilton. And I'm defending Barry Bonds, and I've been defending him, you know, since last year when he surpassed Babe Ruth's home run record, and now he's surpassed Hank Aaron's record. And, you know, this is another outpouring of opinions that have come out in the media since Barry Bonds, you know, hit the home run the other night to the 756th home run, which, by the way, hit another one the night after, so now he's at 757. And, you know, there's been all this concern about the significance and the record being tainted because he's, you know, kind of accused of using steroids. And, you know, my take on it is very similar to Bill Maher's take on it. It's like, so what? You know, first of all, steroids were not banned in baseball till 2003. Now, Barry Bonds cannot be using steroids now because Major League Baseball is testing. Now, he could be using human growth hormone. They cannot test for that, so it's a possibility. But most likely he's not. And so, you know, here's this extraordinary athlete who at 43 years old is still out there hitting home runs, 20, 21 home runs in a season, which is, you know, I mean, unheard of. So I think people have a hard time dealing with that. You know, how could he possibly be doing what he's doing without being, you know, juiced up on, you know, on performance-enhancing drugs? And, you know, he might have been, you know, back during that period when he hit 73 home runs and set the single-season, you know, home run record back in 2001. And going back to 98, in that period, you know, where there was the explosion of home runs going on in baseball with Mark McGwire hitting 66 and with Sammy Sosa hitting over 60. And, you know, baseball enjoyed tremendous popularity during that period. And baseball was coming out of a dark period after the strike and things like that where people got away from baseball. So baseball turned a blind eye to what was going on. As these guys got bigger, stronger, and the balls were going farther, and more home runs were being, you know, racked up by these guys, baseball didn't challenge any of these guys. You know, the only time was when Sammy Sosa had a bat that was confiscated that had cork in it that you weren't allowed to have, and he was embarrassed by that. And there have been a few players that have admitted use. Rafael Palmeiro, who's no longer in baseball, has admitted use. And so, you know, people seem to think that the purity of the game, you know, is the issue here, that the previous guys out there, the Hank Aaron and Babe Ruth and other great home run hitters, didn't use anything to enhance their performance. And I really kind of question that. I mean, Babe Ruth had a reputation of being an alcoholic. So at that period of time, he drank and did whatever it was that, you know, worked for him. And, you know, only recently did baseball ban amphetamines, or what they call greenies. And, you know, I don't know. I can't really say, although I'm kind of suggesting on my website that Hank Aaron might have used greenies, because baseball didn't ban it till last year. Amazingly, it was acceptable to use speed in the locker room, you know, for players who would maybe have a long night and come into the game for the next day and, you know, go to the trainer's room and say, hey, can I have a couple of those greeny pills that would lift them up so they'd be ready for the day's game. Now, it was only banned last year. So, you know, who's to say, you know, what Hank Aaron did back then to lift himself up to be ready to go out there for the next game? Well, maybe Aaron never did it, but I doubt it, because it was sort of endemic in baseball. And now Bonds is being charged with, you know, using performance-enhancing drug. But I'm saying that what he did is what hundreds of other players did, and I believe that in the next few years, and if not way sooner, because there are some media companies like Hearst that are suing Major League Baseball to get the names released to the public. They have names. There's over 100 names that are out there, but they have not released those names. There's a couple of situations. There was the arrest of Russ Grimsley last year on the HBH situation, where he was in possession and supposedly making available to players, a player who played for the Arizona Diamondbacks, and there were names attached to that. But they're holding on to these names because it would be very damaging to baseball to release the names of all these players, many of whom are probably big stars or formerly big stars who are no longer in the game, you know, who were using performance-enhancing drugs. But everybody wants to focus on Bonds, Jason Giambi, Gary Sheffield, and the handful of guys who either have admitted or been charged, you know, with use, and they've been dodging that over the last few years. So I really think that Bonds has been tarred and feathered, you know, during this whole period of time. And for some reason, it upsets people to the degree that they think it's a terrible thing and a sham and a mockery of baseball that here's this guy who's a little bit larger than what, you know, seems to be the body size for baseball players. You know, everybody makes fun of his body shape and size. And here's a guy who's 43. You know, when you get older, you kind of, your body expands a little bit. I mean, you don't stay as thin as you were when you were 18. So Bonds is 43. He's definitely blown up in size. You know, it might have had to do with performance-enhancing drugs. It just might also be, you know, the changing shape of his body. And people are obsessed by it, kind of the way they're obsessed with Michael Jackson's body. I mean, I think that's a little more peculiar, you know, when a guy wants to sort of change the shade of the color of his skin and do all kinds of alterations to his body. It's peculiar, but it's not wrong, you know. And with Bonds' case, it's, you know, is it wrong if he did all this stuff when it was not banned or not prohibited by baseball until the last couple of years? So I really think people are spending way too much time and energy focusing on Bonds, and he should be applauded. It was a great moment. He may not be the most lovable guy, but a lot of these players are not. You know, they have big egos. They think a lot of themselves. You know, Alex Rodriguez is not the nicest guy. You know, yet here he is, you know, hitting 500 home runs and working towards the goal of surpassing Bonds. Why do people love A-Rod so much? I mean, here's a guy who went out and cheated on his wife this year, and they call him Stray Rod. So, you know, what makes him so much better than Barry Bonds? You know, so I don't know. I think people are confused about all of this. I think they spend way too much time and energy. And I think I'm not really even sure why people do this. It just really, you know, astounds me that the American public, you know, puts so much time and energy into hating people like Barry Bonds and Paris Hilton when, you know, what have they really done to harm anybody, honestly, basically? I mean, yes, they're in the public life, and people are allowed to have their opinion and say whatever they want about them, but did Paris Hilton need to go to jail for a suspended license, and does Barry Bonds need to be, you know, flogged, so to speak, you know, by the public because, you know, he may or may not have used performance-enhancing drugs to get to the point where he is now? I don't see the point. You know, accept it. This is the way it is today. And let's move on. You know, it's phenomenal this guy's doing what he's doing at age 43. I mean, he should be applauded. So this is my take on it. And I guess that's the stance that Celeb Stoner is starting to take where, you know, we support, you know, celebrities, you know, who are taking these, you know, hits from the public.
Right on, Steve. Well, it's time for me to pull up my boots here and head on out into the Austin evening.
Have a great time in Texas. Send my best to everybody there, Willie, and I hope lots of money is raised. I hope there's a full house. The back yard is a great venue. There's actually a porch there named after Willie Nelson, so go up there and check it out. And it's just great that Willie has decided, you know, at this point to support the cause even more by raising money. Willie's done so much. It's probably nobody has done more for the marijuana cause than Willie Nelson, but now he's really putting it on the line. So congratulations to Willie, and I hope everybody has a great time in Texas.
Right on, Steve. Steve Bloom checks in with us each week here on the Audio Stash. You can check out Celebrity Stoner News up at his website, celebstoner.com. We've got links to it at normalaudiostash.com.
What's up, guys? This is Miss High Times 2007, and you're chilling with us here at the Normal Podcast.
76% of Americans no longer support arresting and jailing marijuana smokers, and nearly as many support the medical patients having access to medical marijuana. And over 80% of our citizens now believe the war on drugs is an ineffective failure. So the question is, when will the government's misguided war on adult marijuana smokers finally end? When? Simple. When you and your like-minded friends, family, and coworkers get involved with an organization such as the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, also known as NORML. My name is Keith Strop, and I founded the organization in 1970. Contact us at NORML, toll-free, 888-67-NORML, or by visiting the organization's up-to-date webpage at www.normal.org.
Now it's time for a great Friday mix of music, Texas-themed, of course. Here's a really wild one, a really kind of a funny song by a great group of musicians. This is the Pistol Whippersnappers, And this is their song about Texas.
A long time ago, I rode a motorcycle from Riverside, California to Austin, Texas. And I wrote a little song about it. It goes a little something like this. Riverside, California, 1994. I was strung out on methamphetamine, living with a girl who hated me, I hated her. Playing with a band, they hated me, I hated them. Broke up with the band, broke up with the girl, jumped on my 1982 Yamaha 552 motorcycle with no front brakes, no turn signals, expired registration, and me with a suspended license, and I hit the road. Took off that day with a half gram of methamphetamine. Not enough. Ran out of drugs in Barstow. It was going to be a long, long trip. Made my way through the California desert on into the night. By day, found myself in Arizona. By noon, found myself in a little town called Seligman, Arizona, population 600. Got a motel room. Right next to that motel room was a bar called the Black Cat. Walked into the Black Cat, in the middle of the day, there was me, the bartender, and a deaf-mute Indian. I ordered a shot and a beer. Drank all day in that bar. As day gave way to night, the bar started to fill with patrons who were real cowboys, who were real cowboy hats, real cowboy pants, and real cowboy shirts. Drank with these gentlemen all night long, avoided two fist fights, and had one of the best nights of my life. I woke up the next day with a raging hangover still coming down off the meth. Got back on my 1982 Yamaha 552 motorcycle with no front brakes, no turn signals, expired registration, and me still with a suspended license, now putting masking tape over the registration to fool the cops. It worked. And I headed out across Arizona. And more of Arizona. And more of Arizona. Nothing but heaping, steaming piles of Arizona laid out before me. But as I passed through the lower portion of Arizona for the first time in my life, I saw cactus that looked like this. New Mexico. Nothing happened in New Mexico. I just rolled right on through. Down I-10, through Deming and Las Cruces, up to the gateway to the great Lone Star State of Texas in El Paso. The industrial waste of El Paso laid out before me, Mexico on one side of the desert on the other. I stopped and got a hot dog at a 7-Eleven and kept on going. Deeper. Further. Into the vast great wasteland of West Texas in a little town called Kent, K-E-N-T. More about Kent in a second. Kent, Texas. The population exploded when I got there. A gas station, an off-ramp, me, and my broken-down 1982 Yamaha 552 motorcycle with no front brakes, no turn signals, expired registration, and me still with a suspended license, now standing on the side of the road in West Texas. The helmet. I was wearing a full-face helmet, missing the visor the entire way on the trip. I'm now standing on the side of the road in West Texas with a sunburn that looks like this.
I stick out my thumb. No one stops. I continue to stick out my thumb. No one stops. I make a sign out of duct tape and a pen that simply says help. Stick it to my hand, stick it out to traffic. No one stops. Finally, after 4.5 hours, two black gentlemen from the city of Compton, California stop and pick me up. You know what they said to me? You didn't look like you was going nowhere. And they were right. Then they whipped out the largest bag of weed I'd seen in a long time when we got high all the way down I-10. We rode all night down I-10, stoned out of our minds in that 1988 red Scirocco. Rolling joints, passing joints, rolling joints, passing joints, all night long. Down I-10 through the Texas Hill Country to Junction to 290, 290 through Fredericksburg and Johnson City till up ahead was a sign, said Austin City Limits, where they dropped me off just beyond that sign at the Albertsons in Oak Hill at 4:30 in the morning.
The Pistol Whippersnappers with that song about Texas here on the Audio Stash today. We've got links to those guys right up at normalaudiostash.com. We found them at podshow.com. Some fine Texas music there from podshow.com this week. And tonight, if you are anywhere near Austin, Texas, you better come on out to the Backyard Venue in Austin, Texas for the Willie Nelson, Ray Benson Asleep at the Wheel, Carolyn Wonderland, Megan Tubb, Jackie the Joke Man Martland, Mark Stepnosky, Benefit for Normal, the Marijuana Policy Project, and WHAM, the Women's Alliance for Medical Marijuana, all in Austin, Texas. It's going to be a spectacular show tonight. You can find out more at austinfreedomfest.org. And folks, stay tuned next week here to the Audio Stash. When we come back from Austin, we're going to have some great audio for you right here. Everyone, have a great weekend. This has been Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. Listen to the Audio Stash. Vote for us at Podcast Alley or other podcast directory services. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. Everyone have a fun summer weekend out there, and we're back at 4:20 on Monday. The podcasting technology of Normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com.
Let's do something good tonight.
Whether on a train, plane, ferry, or automobile, these days I'm never far removed from listening to Normal's Daily Audio Stash and weekly news on my computer or iPod. Where else in the world can folks listen to up-to-date information produced specifically for cannabis consumers? This is Normal's Executive Director, Alan St. Pierre, and Normal is growing the truth about cannabis, and the harvest is yours to reap. Tune in every day at 4:20 p.m. for your Daily Audio Stash. Get hooked up with Normal's daily and weekly news podcast by visiting normal.org or normalaudiostash.com.